Welcome to my episode with Angela Scanlon. I'm Georgie Crawford. Welcome to the Good Glow Podcast. I believe we all have a story to share, and by sharing those stories, we can help and inspire each other on our journeys through life. This season of the Good Glow Podcast is brought to you with thanks to Promise Gluten Free. When it comes to leading a healthy lifestyle, nutritious food is a key part of my every single day. The Promise Gluten Free range is high in fibre, low in fat, and absolutely delicious. You'll always find it in our press, and I especially love the sourdough rustic seed. Better bread, that's a promise, so make sure to check it out. Angela Scanlon, let's talk about Angela Scanlon. So she's back on the Good Glow today. You know, I did interview Angela last year, but we kept in touch and I got to know a different side to her. And I really wanted to bring that side that I didn't tap into before to the Good Glow today. So here she is in all her madness. She's a deep thinker, so much fun. And she has so much to give to the world. There's a few things to listen out for today. Surround yourself with people who are going to hold you accountable to your dreams and ambitions, who are going to help you make your boat go faster. Sitting down at the weekends on a comfy chair, maybe having a nap. Why don't we let ourselves do the things that make us feel warm? And we also speak about the day that Angela arrived down for a sunrise swim with myself and Miriam Hussey in a taxi, and she was just hysterical from start to finish. Before we get into the podcast, the first ever Good Glow Online Summit is taking place in May. I'm so excited to reveal the lineup and all that we have planned. It is going to be amazing. It's the first one we've ever done. So to secure your free ticket, all you have to do is pre-order my book Glow through the Essens website. You can order from anywhere in the world. So for all the international listeners, this is a chance for you to be part of a Good Glow event because it's going to be online and Essens delivers all over the world. So it's a pre-order exclusive for Essens. And on the 27th of April, when my book is released, you will get an email with details on the summit and a registration link for the summit. So thanks to everyone who's ordered so far. I think you're really going to enjoy the book. It's a bit of everything. There's personal stuff in there. There's learnings in there. There's really cool short stories. I think you're going to enjoy it. So over to the incredible Angela Scanlon. Angela Scanlon, I am so delighted you're back on the Good Glow. How are you? Thank you so much for your time.
I'm good. I'm glad to be back. I feel quite honoured. Like a double whammy with you is special. And the last time I was on was to talk about Joyrider, my book. It's now a paperback. So that feels like 10 seconds ago. But yeah, so much has happened. And I was like right after having my baby, the Wi-Fi wasn't working. It was a shit show, let's be honest.
Oh, it was a complete shit show. I couldn't see you. The camera was like bouncing all over the room. But in that moment when we did that podcast, I was like, I need Angela to be in my life. I love you. And since that podcast, we've kept in touch. Yeah. We've even gone for a sea swim together. And I think we really hit it off as soul sisters. So thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you.
I was saying to you, and I think so much of your personality came across in your book. Your book is amazing. I'd recommend everyone to get it and have a look at it. It's a real deep dive into your life. But when I see you on Instagram and you're doing your thing, you always look so happy. Oh. You've got it all sorted out. Like, is that the real Angela?
No, it's a total illusion or delusion, maybe. You make me happy. What can I say? But it depends. I'm quite extreme. I'm quite up and down. Like if I work really hard to be positive. Sometimes it feels very easy and often it feels very difficult. And that's maybe less so now, but certainly my journey, for want of a better word, to this point has involved very long periods, you know, decades, give or take a few weeks, of periods where I have not been naturally happy and positive. So I think, which I actually now feel really okay with. I used to feel upset and a bit embarrassed and fucking raging, actually, that I wasn't this happy-go-lucky person that I kind of believed other people to be. And now I just think, I don't know that it's real life anyway. I think everyone has their own versions of those peaks and troughs. Mine lasted, I think, quite a long time. But now I feel like I have all of the tools to, get myself out of those things quicker. And I feel empowered to do that. Whereas before I thought, oh God, maybe this is just me. Maybe I'm just always going to feel like this. And this kind of sense that I had no control or power over the way I felt. I've been talking through it. And I know how to dig myself out of a hole now, I suppose. Or at least I know that I'm not going to be in that hole forever. And even the knowledge of that, the knowledge that I have been able to come out of these, you know, these states time and time again, means I have the confidence to know that that will happen again. Whereas when I think your first time round, it's pretty bleak.
Yeah, because you've never survived it before.
Exactly.
For you, I think you were living in the external for so many years and like putting yourself out there and TV gigs and RTE and BBC and over and back. But then when you went and looked at your inner world, everything changed.
Yeah. And also I think, probably the fact that my job is outward facing, you know, and most people would probably recognize this quicker than the person who's doing the jazz hands. But like that comes from a deep desire to be validated by somebody. And that's probably because you're not able to validate yourself. So there's definitely usually, I think, a reason that people are drawn to being on a stage, whatever form that takes. And so, I was definitely fed by the things that happened externally, whether that was, you know, applause or a new job or somebody patting me on the head and saying I was a great little girl. Whereas it took a long time for me to think, actually, I think it's more important what I think of myself and my own choices and my own behavior. And then suddenly that drive to be on the stage is not that it's any less, but maybe there's a different drive to be there. There's a different energy behind that.
And it's like when you become comfortable in yourself, that's when things fall into place. And
totally.
That's when, you know, your career is like picking up speed. And yeah. I mean, it's been amazing, so far. But it seems like at the moment, your show on RTE during the summer was absolutely brilliant. To see a female presenting the show. We spoke about this in Sandy Cove that day.
Yes.
And something that really struck me was when you said that you wanted to show up and look like a girl and not wear suits.
Oh, yes, I did say that. And I really stand by that. It was very conscious. And looking at me, some people may question whether there's a lot of thought put into my outfits on some days. But I definitely felt like, okay, you know, this is, whether we like it or not, has been a slot, Saturday night, entertainment, chat show. That is a man's gig, certainly in Ireland has been, you know, we've been blessed with Miriam O'Callaghan for a period, but that's essentially it in a very long list of other lads. And I was really determined, actually. I felt, obviously, I wanted to do a good show. I'm really creative and I have lots of ideas and I have, and so I wanted to be involved in every part of that, much to the annoyance of some people at times. But the way I presented physically was also important to me. And I think sometimes we can be really dismissive of that as a frivolous, like silly old birds playing with clothes. But I thought, actually, I want to subvert that and go, do you know what? Just because I'm sitting in the big boy's chair does not mean I have to dress like him. And so I thought, actually, what I would like is for my daughter. Actually, I mean, it's not appropriate for her to tune in to ask me anything, FYI. But for a kid or my younger self to turn on the TV and see a woman that they think, oh, yeah, she feels like me or my sister or my mom or my cousin or whatever. But she also looks like, you know, I just didn't want to play at being a guy, like in the 80s power suit kind of way. I was like, we're here and I'm going to try and do it in a way that feels true to me. And some, and I love a trouser suit. But I kind of pushed myself to be, to own being a woman in that chair on all levels.
Yeah, it definitely came across. And after you filmed the last show, that day I happened to put up a reel of Jerry Hussey saying,
I love him. And Miriam.
He's amazing, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Miriam, of course, yeah. But he said something like, surround yourself by people who will hold you accountable to your dreams and ambitions. And you text me at 2 o'clock in the morning because you were going to cancel our swim.
Yeah.
And you saw that video and you showed up the next day.
Life is so valuable and time is so valuable. Who I invest my time into is my choice. Don't surround yourself with people who tolerate your excuses or your bad behavior, or you didn't turn up to the gym. Oh, I was a bit tired. Yeah, that's okay. I was a bit tired myself. They're not good to you. Surround yourself with people who love you enough to hold you accountable to your dreams and your ambition.
Now, me and Miriam were standing on the shore and we were like, do you think Angela's going to show up? I was like, I don't think she's going to show up. Then in the distance, all we see is this taxi coming down the road really slowly, and it turns and it does a U-turn. Now, you know, people aren't usually getting taxis to their sea twins.
It was extra. Did I have my gold coat on by any chance, blending in? I don't like attention.
So you arrive down, and you know, like when I feel like when I'm going for a swim, I try to be a little bit understated because, you know, these people have been swimming here for years and we're showing up in our camouflage dry robes.
Yeah, you brought me one, thanks.
So anyway, you arrived, you had everyone who was there laughing, you're entertaining everyone and you jump in the sea. Why do you do things like that?
Well, I forgot about that holding people accountable. I loved that so much because I think sometimes I have veered conveniently too. And look, it's a balance like everything. But I think I've gone, do you know what? Like, lie down and have a nap. Let yourself rest. It's not all about productivity. This is a toxic society that makes us do things all the time. Just sleep. And that really, you know, yeah, I take advantage of that sometimes. And I thought, oh my God. And sometimes I'm like rolling my eyes at Roy, my husband, who's kind of, you know, suggesting that I do things that I'm too lazy to do or not interested in doing. And I kind of will paint him as this, you know, bore who's trying to ruin my fun. And when I saw that, I thought, oh my God, no. He loves and believes in me and wants me to be better. He's not trying to kill the mood here. And so, and then it was just such a reframe for me in so many areas of my life that I was like, I don't want people to go, don't worry, babe, you like roll over, I'll see you next time. It's like, yes, get your arse out of bed and come and do it. And so I did show up. Because, and I literally turned over in the bed multiple times. I was like, I'm going to cancel. I think they'll be fine. I think they'll actually expect it. And then I got into the taxi and I just left. And it was so, so lovely. And I think that idea, I mean, we filmed in October, November. So obviously it's a little spicy at that stage of the game. And I hadn't been sea swimming. I have an ice bath at home and I'd gotten really addicted to that. But I hadn't actually jumped in the sea for a long time. And I'm obsessed with it. I do cold showers all the time and I love it so much. And I actually love the togetherness of doing it. Because I remember you being like, Can we do it? And I'm like, get in the sea. And then you were going, will we dunk our heads? And there's just a kind of like that gentle support, and sometimes not so gentle support, where you're like, yeah, you can do it. Get your arse in. And it was really lovely, and it was really a lovely way to finish a run of that show, you know. So it felt like, because oftentimes it's quite intense. I'm, you know, leaving my family and flying over on a Tuesday, and it's a big old day. Wednesday, you've done production meetings Tuesday from here, and then back Thursday. So it's a, you know, in theory, I'm meeting people and I'll see you for breakfast, and then you're just frazzled and, you know, incapable of holding a conversation. So it was one of the few I had, Georgie, I'm not going to lie. Professional.
Would you move? Would you ever consider moving home?
I said, who are you? My mom. look, honestly, last week I was looking at houses. There's always a massive draw for me to home. So I think never say never, and I'm getting more confident with going, let's see.
Yeah, because I was talking to Greg O'Shea during the week, and he moved to London, but he only lasted for 3 months. So why do you think you have lasted so long over there?
You know what? I honestly think it's just brute stubbornness is the truth of it. I remember coming over to London when I used to work in fashion. I was a stylist, personal shopper, did a bit of writing around fashion stuff. I had a stall originally, but that's a whole other day's work. Anyway, so I was like coming over to do Fashion Week and to cover it for Tatler magazine and da da da. And I remember in my head thinking, like, I am born to be in London. Like, I watched Sex and the City. I just thought this cosmopolitan life was what I was destined to be part of. And I absolutely hated it. I felt so lonely. I felt so overwhelmed. I remember, like, my agent, that's probably years after that, like, staying on the phone with me as I tried to get directions around London. I realize now that it was my system, actually, like my nervous system just being totally overwhelmed. I couldn't literally couldn't read a map. I couldn't orientate myself ever. I was chronically overwhelmed. And I just remember coming back and kind of thinking, that's like, it's unfinished business. I felt weirdly ashamed, actually, that I couldn't conquer London. It was this kind of thing that was stuck in me somehow, that I knew that it wasn't necessarily going to be a pleasant experience. It wasn't ever going to be an easy experience for me. It wasn't a natural fit, actually, is the truth of it. And it took me much longer to figure that out. I think I just berated myself for not, like, feeling alive, I guess, in this city. And now, yeah, I just kind of accept that it's where we are and where I am. But that it's really hard. And I think second time round, I came back with Roy, actually. After we got married, we moved. It's nearly 10 years ago now. It's 8 years ago. Sorry, I'm really bad with dates. And I don't think I could have done it without a solid base and without the safety and security of him and the comfort of him, because it's really hard. And I'm basically grew up in the country. I'm a country girl.
And when you say it's hard, like, what is hard?
I mean, I guess that's different for every person. But it's intense. Yeah. And I suppose it's like, I remember living in Shoreditch for a while. It's a very trendy place, right? And I didn't realise how kind of Yeah, disconnected, I suppose, would be the word I'd say. I felt from everything and everyone. And I remember going out and doing a job for the One Show one day and we were filming in the country. Now, it hadn't even dawned on me that there was greenery. Sorry, that sounds like a mental thing to say, but I would go home to like get my fix. And then I'd come back to London to do my work. And I was very much in the thing. London was a place for me to like sow seeds and to make it work. And there was a lot of pressure that I placed on myself to do that. And then I could breathe. I'd come home and I could breathe a bit. And then I realized, oh no, like it's hard physically because there's not that much greenery. In London, on the one, like on a really basic level, you feel like you haven't seen. It's possible to not see a tree in days, and so I had to physically move myself to somewhere that was more green. That immediately allowed me to feel like safer. And then I just think everyone's really busy and things are far away, and you don't have the luxury. And not everyone has this, obviously, in Ireland. But you know, if you want to plan to meet people, you kind of have to plan a month in advance. Your friends probably don't live down the road from you. And yeah, you can go a long time without really feeling seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And look, I love that on the one hand, the anonymity and being able to be lost and no one gives a monkey's who you are. And then at the same time, it's the most comforting and lovely thing. And again, I sound so misty-eyed and creepy when I talk about this, but like when I fly into Dublin and some lad behind the booth says, "Welcome home," I'm like, "Oh, babe, this is the best thing ever." It's like, welcome home. It's just like there's a familiarity and an openness and a nosiness and a cheek and a kind of spark, I think, that you really miss. I really miss.
When you said that, so this amazing lady, Kathy Wheatley, she's a friend of mine. She had twins through her surrogate mother in Ukraine. And then the war broke out in Ukraine and she physically went into Ukraine, crossed over the border during the war, got her surrogate mother and her kids out. And this lady, Ivana, had never been on an airplane before. She'd never left Ukraine. But they were on the last leg from the UK to Ireland. And they were really scared of what was going to happen at passport control because Kathy didn't know.
Documentations and all that.
Yeah, like it was all just panic, you know, in a panic mode. So they get to the screen, they get up to the guy in Dublin Airport and he opens Kathy's passport and he goes, "Welcome home, Kathy." And she goes, "Oh, thanks a million." And he opened Ivana's passport and he said, "Welcome to your new home."
Oh my God.
And I was just like, oh my God, that's so Irish.
Oh my God, that's so gorgeous. I'm sorry. And I actually do, like, I think that's the thing. Sometimes Irish people, our reputation globally is of, and I mean, I probably feed into this and you started by saying you seem so positive. And that I think we are deeply sensitive people. As a nation. And I think that's because of, you know, ancestral trauma and oppression and years of, you know, like hardship, truthfully. But it has made us really open and really, like, really soft, actually, and really empathetic. And I think that's what makes Irish people really special. It's also what makes it really hard to go to a city where that is not the common language. You know, it doesn't have to be said. It's totally unspoken, and we dance and we sing and we're the life and soul, but underneath we know each other, if that makes sense. And I think that is like a perfect illustration of, you know, seeing what somebody needs and without a big fuss, without any song and dance, just knowing what that person needs in order to feel like safe and accepted. And yeah, that's magic, actually.
Just a short break to thank Promise Gluten Free for supporting the Good Glow this season. You know, it's loved in households all over the country, and I've been reading out some customer reviews on the podcast, and here is one more. Denise from Tipperary said, "Promise Gluten Free has really changed
my life. One of the hardest things when you find out that you're celiac is finding a good quality bread that you can stick to eating every day. So once I found Promise gluten-free bread, I find that it's a lot easier to live the lifestyle of a celiac. If you're looking for some inspiration, head over to their social media page for so many delicious recipes and ideas. You can find them at Promise Gluten Free. Better bread, that's a promise.
Is there something in your book that you wrote that when you released your book, you were surprised resonated so much with people?
It's the voices in my head, which I thought were very unique to me. The chapter is called Your Subconscious is a Little Bitch. And so it's identifying, which was done through therapy, I should admit. It was not like something that I was able to identify myself. But I realized, and, you know, with a lot of work, I realized these aspects of myself that would kind of take over in different situations and that were really unhelpful sometimes and really helpful in other situations. And so I started naming these parts of my character or my, like, yeah, the voices in my head, essentially, and the different aspects of me that would, make me behave in certain ways that were unhelpful, you know, that were built up. Like, so there's, you know, Kimono Kim. or Beverly Hills, Beverly Hills, something. Oh my God, I'm really not selling this, am I? But basically, there's these bits of me, like there's a taskmaster bit of me that has been really helpful in driving me to get to where I am career wise, but who doesn't give a shit about anything else in my life. So we'll drive straight past all of the things that nourish me, that feed me, that soothe me, that mind me in pursuit of this one thing. That's their job. And so until I could recognize that that was a bit of me that's beneficial on the one hand, once it's kept in check, and that not a part of me that has to be obeyed. It's not the whole of me. So I can go, okay, cool. I hear you. I don't need to explain to you why I'm not working this afternoon. And so,
ooh, I love this.
Yeah. So I know it's an amazing exercise. So you kind of start to like almost come out of yourself and see the different bits of you that are driving you to do things that are not helpful for you or your relationships, and make friends with them so that you can kind of keep them under control, you know, so you can acknowledge their benefits.
Yeah, and that and to know they're not all of you.
They're not all of you.
When you go to therapy, do you sit there and wonder if your therapist likes you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think if you don't, you're a psycho. Please tell me you do too.
Like, it takes over my brain. It takes over everything.
There's a bit of me that's like, oh, no, that's way too needy. Don't admit that. Fuck them. I don't care what they think of me. But like, I think that's human nature. Now, I have to say, it took me a really, really, really long time. Like only now. And we're what? Around three, four years. Like I said, I'm not great at timings into our relationship. Only now can I properly look her in the eyes to have a conversation.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. So I thought, like, I'm good at eye contact. It's literally my job, right? And like in a restaurant, I'm making eye contact. If somebody next to me, I find it really unnerving. If I meet someone and I'm like, shifty bastard, they wouldn't look you in the eye. That is just FYI in future. If it's excruciating, you need to figure out how to hold eye contact with me or you're dead to me. But I find that really, like, really unnerving. And yet the vulnerability of those open, honest conversations meant that I literally couldn't maintain eye contact as I was talking.
Whoa. Oh, yeah. My God.
So I'd like look at the floor, or I could maintain eye contact when I was in the mode delivering a story about such and such and this person, that person. And then as soon as it got to me, I couldn't look. And so much so, that and I now do my sessions on Zoom. But originally I would go to the office and there it was a chair situation across from each other. And she bought a couch and was like, oh, it's there, you know, if anyone wants to, as in it's business expense, I'm going to pop that couch there and whoever wants it, it's there. And I used the it completely changed how I was able to express myself.
Like, what do you mean? Did you lie on the couch?
I lay on the couch. And initially, oh, I thought it was really funny. And I was like, this is so cliched and Freudian. Lie on the couch and tell me about your feelings. And but she had recognised that actually in my self-consciousness at being seen, actually, ironically, that I was really unable to get to anything of meaning.
Whoa.
For me. And so I lay down and suddenly I could forget, not forget that she was there, but I didn't have to feel like I could just speak much more freely. And it completely, completely changed things for me. And now, and then I would do my Zooms where I was aware and she was situated, but I could make eye contact if I was making a point, and then I could go into my own little world and talk about something. And now I'm able to have eye contact and have quite difficult conversations, and it's like, wow. Oh my god, this is a whole new world. Yeah,
because I was talking to PJ Gallagher and he said, like, men talk shoulder to shoulder, whereas sometimes we need face to face. Interesting to know though that you can't automatically, or you can't presume that straight away it can be face to face.
I also think, and this is more of a note to anyone who hasn't done much therapy or who has looked into it and got, no, I didn't like that one, or it's not for me. It took me genuinely, and I don't really remember when the shift was, but I was absolutely performing for the first year of my, I don't know, relationship is the wrong word probably, but when I would go in there, I'd literally be prepping, like, was going, you know, remember back in the day when they'd say, we're going to do confession, and you'd be like, what are you bringing? What are you bringing? I fought with my sister. I stole penny sweets, whatever it was. You were kind of prepping what you'd offer. And I realized that I do that. I mean, I literally do it for a living. Here's what I have. Tell me if I'm lovable or not. And so I would be kind of not storing up things, but I would have to present something to her to solve. And so it took me a really long time to actually properly trust. And I remember that, yeah, to like acknowledge that she was a very important figure in my life and in my, yeah. But it took,
wow.
It took time. And I assumed it had happened straight away. I was like, okay, how long? Right. We think in 3 months, 4 years in, you're like, oh, right, now we're sucking diesel.
Yeah.
Literally. But I would honestly sacrifice anything to do that.
For your therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the way I relate to people, my ability to stop myself when I'm in patterns of behavior that are wrong, when I'm like losing my sweet little mind, it's, yeah, like priceless.
That's interesting that it gives you the tools to kind of bring into your life that you can then, you know, when those limiting beliefs or those thoughts are coming in, that you can like ground yourself. Do you have like a weekend ritual or something that you do? Like, it's the weekend, this is what we do on a Friday, this is what we do on a Saturday. Or are you kind of, you know, that other side of your personality that's always kind of like
moving,
on the go and airy and, you know,
no,
flighty?
Weekend, I try as best I can not to work weekends. And so it's definitely like much more sacred kind of family time that can, you know, involve ballet if we can get her out the door on a Saturday morning. And my daughter actually turns one tomorrow. My baby turns one. And so things have been like, I think when you're in that first year, everything is up for grabs and you're dictated by that. So our routines have slightly changed. But Saturdays are, you know, pancakes, food, shopping, you know, probably there's a match. I mean, I'm not watching the match, but there is a match on and Ruby watches it with Roy.
Are you good at sitting on the couch at the weekend during the day?
I am not great at it, I have to be honest.
It's all I want to do and I just never do it.
I know, but I think it's really important to do it, you know. But it is hard.
Why can't we let ourselves do it?
I haven't got there. That's today's. I'm going to write a note now. I'll bring that to my therapist on Thursday. What is this problem now? And how are you going to fix this for me? What's that about? Sometimes I'm like, okay, yeah, but why? 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 And she's like, well, we literally have 7 minutes left and I don't think we're going to get to that today. But anyway, sorry. I love the slowness of a weekend, and we have quite an open house, and we absolutely love hosting, and so people in the door for whatever meal. I like to be a successful session or day has been when someone comes for breakfast and stays for lunch. Like if you get two meals, if you're having to refeed them, you've done a good job. You know what I mean? So I like that idea of lazily like sitting around for hours. And that was the one.
But not on your couch.
But not my couch. It's usually on a hard, hard seat that keeps me upright and diligent. Not so much on my couch. I do remember once I had a lovely nap on my couch. I do. It was actually a real moment for me. I need to do that more often. But I try to, like, meditation is a big part of my ritual and my routine and what holds me together mentally. And so I try to get certainly a longer meditation in on the weekend.
Whose meditations do you listen to?
Tara Brock. Have you listened to her?
No.
Oh, babe, you're going to love Tara Brock. So in Joyrider, I talk again about self-care, and I think we're all really good at self-care for Instagram, and it all looks lovely and it's quite beige in my mind at the moment, literally in every other way. However, it's like holds a value. I get it. I love it. Give me a bath for 3 hours. Done. However, self-compassion, less shiny. It's more silent. It's more internal. It's more about giving yourself a break. It's more about like forgiving yourself, not talking shit to yourself. And Tara Brock talks about rain. Oh my God, I'm literally going to have to Google it. Is this like a thing? Rain by Tara Brock. Hang on one sec. Wait with me, guys. It's going to be worth it. Don't leave. Don't go. Come back after commercial break. Tara Brock. Okay. This is what it says. Recognize, allow, investigate and nurture. Okay. So I don't know whether you've heard of loving kindness meditations, but like it's kind of Buddhist, like Buddhist meditation where you will send loving kindness to someone who you fucking can't stand for whatever reason. And that's, you know, growth situation. And then send loving kindness to someone who you're neutral about. And then you send it back to yourself, which is often the hardest thing. And I think often you'll like, you know, find your inner child and you'll, you know, recognize that you're actually really quite mean to yourself. So, but anyway, yeah, the Tara Brock thing is built on loving kindness. But again, it's about that kind of pause and knowing when to, yeah, like allow yourself a bit of space and to mind yourself. I am very much a like holding of my heart, hand on my belly. I will often in bed, if I've had like a tough day, hold my shoulder, like skin to skin. I'm really do it as a comforting thing. I've had like learning how to self-soothe as a, you know, 40-year-old woman. It's kind of pathetic, but yeah.
I love that. Mm. And I'm definitely going to try that. I'm going to link her. Is it her a website or YouTube
Tara
or something?
Brock, she has like, but you'll find her on podcasts and yeah, she's on YouTube.
I'd be into that. Obviously, you're so fab. You're so beautiful. Everything you wear is gorgeous, like your jewelry. And that was obviously, you wanted to create a business around that.
Well, yeah, I guess. So I launched Freckle, which is spelt F-R-K-L, but pronounced Freckle, just over a year ago, a year and a few months. And jewellery, I think, was always a thing. Because I obviously, as I said before, I worked as a stylist and I'm really interested in clothes and I'm very passionate about, I mean, maybe that's a stretch, but I love clothes and I love dressing up. And but jewellery has always had this kind of meaning for me. I mean, it does for many people. But I remember reading this thing where somebody said, oh, jewellery, like you need those clothes. So you've made a conscious choice to wear what you're wearing, but it's also serving a functional, like it's covering you, right? So it's practical as well as expressive, if you like. With jewellery, there's literally no need for it. There's no practical reason for you to wear jewellery. And so to me, that felt like the power of choosing a piece of jewellery then becomes about it connecting with you on a much deeper level. It means much more because, yes, that dress is lovely, but you also need to cover your arse before you go to Tesco. And so actually, jewellery, you don't need any of it. So you buy it because you love it or you're thinking about somebody you love and you want them to be like on you. I'm sorry, that took a turn. But yeah, I think there's something really personal about the connection that we have with jewellery and our ability to connect with other people through those pieces of jewellery. And so that was kind of the way it was built for me. But then also the idea that it was, you can have like really precious sentimental pieces that mark moments in your life that don't cost, you know, endless amounts of money. And I think that's really important to me, that everybody, you know, there's an inclusivity to it. And I think, you know, I originally, when I started working, was like working with brands that were quite high end. And I don't know, it's just not that interesting to me. I think being able to speak to a wider like audience and things that everybody can get on board with is much more exciting.
Yeah, and it's fab. And I love that part of your brand. Are you ready for your quick fire round?
Oh, I'm really not great at this. I'm going to sit up straight. Let's go.
What is the song that you put on when you want to feel good?
Right now, I can buy myself flowers. Miley Cyrus is never the person I thought that I would quote or sing to. I just love it. It's like a comeback song, and just the meaning and the grace and the like chutzpah. I love it. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Who's your favourite person outside of your family?
That's an awful question. I can't choose one person. Who's yours?
Audrey, my best friend.
Okay, so that was an easy one for you. Who's my favourite person outside of my family? My therapist. That's not even a joke. No, maybe she's the person I need most. I get mixed up.
No, no, you're leaving it at that. That's perfect. Okay. No other answer necessary. What's your favourite place?
West Cork. Like nice. Just generally as a county. I could specify, but I think generally, yeah, down there. That neck of the woods.
What a spot. And then leave us, Angela, with your mantra.
Oh, my mantra. I was going to say, just do it. And then I realised someone else has that one. Trademarked. Be unapologetically you.
Ooh.
Was that one?
Yeah, that's a short story from my book.
Shut up.
Yeah. Be unapologetically you.
There you go. Wavelength. Oh, wow. Frequency. We're on the same frequency. Be unapologetically you.
Oh, I love
Harder
that.
Harder than it sounds.
Angela, thank you so much. Will you come back for a sea swim with me someday?
I'd love to go sea swimming with you anytime. I need to get the neck size up in that swim snug suit. It's a little wedgied on me, but here we are.
Swim club.
I keep calling it swim snug. Yeah. Swim club. I absolutely love them. I felt like a Bond girl.
Such a moment. Thank you so much. So your book is out now.
In paperback. So it's cheaper. Okay. Yeah. It's in paperback everywhere. Essence, online, Amazon, whatever.
Brilliant.
Sound so enthusiastic. Freckle is at myfreckle.com. Ask me anything. It's coming back soon. Sorry, I sound high as a kite. And you know, you can find me loitering in your local bus station.
Well, I love your podcast. I'm going to link in the show notes. Your podcast is brilliant. And thank you so much for being such a great friend to me and coming back. I love you so much.
I can't wait to read your book. And thank you for everything you do.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with Angela. She's just a ray of sunshine. And I feel like she's speaking so openly from her heart. And I've linked her Instagram page in the episode show notes. So make sure to give her a follow, because her stories will brighten up your day. As I said in the intro, my book is out on April 27th. Really excited to bring it to the world. I feel like I've given it so much so that I feel like I have abandoned myself and my healthy habits. So I'm looking forward to putting myself back together and getting back on track and rediscovering that inner glow. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next week.